Putter.
Hey everybody, Kate Delaney, America Tonight. What you just heard there from Syria, lots of problems since we last met. In fact, we're going to take you back to some of what we sent you into the weekend with in our America Tonight re-rack, but Syria on the minds of so many. Remember, you can always throw in your two cents. I want to make sure you know you can dance here on this show, left of left, right of right, somewhere in between, a centrist, whatever you label yourself as. You, my friends, are invited to this version and every version of America Tonight. 855-266-5283. 855-266-5283. So, Syria, now that we know it's official that there is gas, there is sarin gas has been used on the people, or at least so we've been told forensically. The forensic networks built up over the last 6 months by the U.S. and some allied spy agencies that are very active in Syria are playing this big role in the analysis of what happened when the Syrian forces bombarded suburbs around Damascus this past week, which is what you heard there. Our intelligence agencies have concluded chemical weapons were used, I repeat, were used on a very large scale. Will the president opt to order military strikes for the first time in this conflict or not? So far, that is not what we are hearing out of Washington, except for that you have the Secretary of Defense and some others out of the Pentagon saying all necessary means will be used. So that means they're getting up to the line and deciding whether they're jumping off or not as far as Syria is concerned. What does my gut tell me? That the push is on to make something happen and that the U.S. is preparing for the possible invasion in Syria. Wow, how shocking is that? Do you think we'll actually do more than aid, actually send in some forces? Now, if we send in some forces, from what my sources say is we're talking about a small amount. We're talking about basically black ops. Isn't that interesting? And we know already that we have some intelligence people in the field already in Syria working this. So it's your taxpayer dollars that fund anything that goes into aid to Syria. How far should the U.S. go, if at all, now that we know some of what we know? And the horrific video, of course, is when you see the children wrapped up in sheets and bodies upon bodies piled up on top of each other. The British government is saying that chemical weapons were the only plausible explanation for the intense casualties this past week. The White House says there was evidence that it was used, but the White House is stopping short of that, saying that we just need to make a final determination. And that final determination has not been made yet. If it's going to happen, my bet is it happens in the next day or two. It won't go on longer than that. So either they're jumping in or not jumping in. What is it? What is it the U.S. needs to do here? And man, oh man, we have just scratched the surface. Coming up, Zach Badorf. In case you didn't hear it, it is one of the best things we've aired on America Tonight. We're going to let you hear Zach because he was in Turkey. This was heading into the weekend and snuck into a camp into Syria, crossed the line for a few hours, knowing that there was a great chance he could have been kidnapped, because that's the kind of stuff that happens. It doesn't matter anymore if you're a journalist, if you wear something that says press on, probably, if anything, you might be a target. He made it out. He had lots of stories to tell, and we're going to let you hear them, those stories. And also, we're going to let you hear what the latest is from the Pentagon. I just checked, and it's still the same Luke Vargas. We had a conversation about what the aid is and where we're at, and everything there is still the same status quo, because we're still talking about the Syrians wanting $3 billion. Wow. So Syria, Syria, Syria. And I always say this on America Tonight. Pick your poison in the Middle East. It's like quicksand. And who's next? In Egypt, it's nothing but mass mayhem. In fact, they delayed the trial of Muslim Brotherhood leaders because I think they're concerned about what's happening, the military is anyway, what's happening in the streets, mass chaos, violent chaos. And the Egyptians are blaming the Muslim Brotherhood now, even though the Muslim Brotherhood is trying to scapegoat the Christians, throw it back on them. So MB is pretty much AOL. They're running out of luck in Egypt, and the supporters are dwindling. There's night curfews, there's angry mobs, there's closed roads. We've talked about that before. Hardly anyone is on the street after 7 o'clock. And the violence just keeps ratcheting up. Over 1,000 people to date have been killed. 1,000 people. And weren't we just dealing with this a year and a half ago? So I think the Muslim Brotherhood, which is trying to push anger against the Christians in Egypt, it's not working. So there's a massive clash happening at this point, and I think that just continues to get worse. I don't see any light at the end of that tunnel either. So while all this is happening, it's vacation for the guys and the women on the Hill. Congress, at this point, is out, as you know, and they're coming back. We'll come back shortly. Congress is urging, at least some that were part of the Sunday Swirl, urging caution with Obama prepping for plans for Syria. Remember this whole act of war thing and all of that? So, can't be one of those, right? You have Syrian President Assad and his forces that supposedly pulled out the chemical weapons near Damascus, killing at least 100 people with those chemical weapons. With the chemical weapons. So now you have a few members of the House Foreign Affairs Committee that I refer to, the Sunday Swirl, is the political talking heads. Because just because they're on vacation, many of them are still doing some of the Sunday shows, naturally, especially with all of this going on. So some in Congress saying, be careful. Be careful. Fact-finding mission happening right now, Monday, on site. What will they come up with from Damascus? Hang with us. We're going to introduce you to Zach Badorf next on America Tonight. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. but it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
Have you ever felt like the United States government knows way too much about your financial affairs? I continue to hear stories about property seizures, frozen bank accounts, confiscation of stocks and bonds. It makes me wonder if the U.S. citizen will ever again have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Unfortunately, with the Drug and Money Laundering Act, the IRS Revenue Ruling 6045 of 1984, and the Trading with the Enemy Act and Franklin D. Roosevelt's Executive Order of 1933, some precious metal holdings are subject to government intervention. For this reason, Midas Resources has prepared a report explaining the boundaries of trading precious metals privately. Whether if you have any intention of trading with Midas Resources or not, I have instructed my representatives to give this report out free. Call for your free copy at 1-800-686-2237. When investing, always proceed with caution. Again, call 1-800-686-2237. Exercise your legal right to trade metals privately. 1-800-686-2237.
Alabama, it's coming, and it's the event you and your family will not want to miss. The Southern Preppers Convention and Green Living Expo, Saturday and Sunday, September 7th and 8th, at the newly renovated Oxford Civic Center in Oxford, Alabama, where admission is totally free. There's something for everyone. Free classes and seminars on topics like food preparation, food harvesting, and food preservation. Free giveaways every 30 minutes. You could win seed kits, food, doTERRA oil, starter kits, water filters, and more, including a year's supply of food. Guest speakers include Bob from Black Dog Survival School, Mike from White Harvest Seeds, Dr. Tom Stoner from Dr. Med Kits, and more. And be sure to stop by and check out the Youngevity booth, the Southern Preppers Convention and Green Living Expo, September 7th and 8th, a weekend of education and preparation that's totally free to attend. Don't forget, the Country Inn and Suites in Oxford has special rates available for those who attend the expo. Get all the details at thesouthernpreppers.com. That's thesouthernpreppers.com.
As we kick off another week here on America Tonight, Syria is going to be the big story. Mark my words, weapons inspectors checking out Damascus. We had a chance to catch up with Zach Badorf before all of this, and actually while all of this is unfolding, and he snuck over from Turkey into a Syrian camp of really refugees who were trying to make their way into Turkey. He talked about a couple of things here that you'll get to hear, including their reaction to America and whether or not America should be doing something to help them, and if they're waiting for the Americans to ride in on the proverbial white horse. So again, keep in mind, Zach joins us initially from Turkey and then talks about his trip into Syria and just how treacherous that was. Zach, thanks for popping on. I know it's been a very long, long day for you. First of all, explain what's happening in Turkey, because we've been talking about this now through the eyes of people there, through people who are Turkish that are here in the United States that are upset by what's happening in their homeland. What have you seen since you've been in Turkey?
Yeah, I came to Turkey to do this reporting on the Syrian crisis. I mean, when I was doing my preparation, I was hoping that I'd be able to spend, you know, a week, maybe 2 weeks within Syria itself, perhaps in Aleppo across the border. But you know, it turned out that the circumstances were too dangerous to really spend much time in Syria. I was fortunate enough today to be able to be in a situation where it was safe to go inside with the Syrian who is a refugee and living in Turkey. You know, he took me inside to, you know, he knows the area well. I went to a camp where internally displaced people, IDPs are living. I mean, so basically they're people who are fleeing the conflict and they haven't left the country. They're just leaving, going to other parts of the country. And there were about 11,000 people in this camp. I talked to an FSA fighter. I talked to someone preparing food. I talked to one of the camp managers. I talked to different people throughout the camp, children and adults. And I spent about 5 hours inside Syria itself, just down the road, about 1 or 2 kilometers away, according to information that I have, where checkpoints where Al-Qaeda hangs out, you know, these groups known as Jabhat al-Nusra or the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. In fact, the more radical, more extreme group, ISIS, was the group that has a checkpoint just down the road. And the biggest fear is kidnapping. So, you know, my biggest fear today was that someone would spot me, give these guys a call, and they roll up the road just 5 minutes away and grab me. And, you know, unfortunately, that's happened to some journalists. They take a ride from the border, from the Turkish-Syrian border, try to go to Aleppo to do some good quality reporting, and they get grabbed by these guys as they go through checkpoints. And, you know, they're detained. You know, there are American, there are foreign journalists at this very moment being detained by these groups, and they're not really even negotiating. They're not reaching out to sort of get kidnapping, ransom, or whatever. They're just holding them. Who knows what's going to happen to them? It's such a terrible situation for journalists. And you know, obviously that there are only a handful of journalists, but it's an equally harrowing experience for hundreds of thousands, millions of Syrians who are going through incredibly difficult times in Syria itself.
The, you know, in talking about that, seeing the camp, being there for the internally displaced persons, as you were mentioning, in that camp were there thousands, was it just, I'm picturing in my mind, trying to give the listeners a picture of this, were there thousands of people and were there tents and what did that look like?
Yeah, let me describe that for you. So, about 11,000 people, I'm told, are living in this particular camp, the Salame. The IDP camp where I went today. You know, there are millions of Syrians who are internally displaced. In this particular camp, it's run by an organization called, with the acronym IHH. It's a Turkish organization that supports, Syrians are just across the border. They're living in tents. When I say tents, I mean very, very basic tents. No running water, no electricity, unbearable heat. I mean, I'm still sunburned from just spending the day there. They get two meals a day, just limited medical care. The folks who are there who are doing the humanitarian aid work, they're doing a great job doing what they can with what they have. But it's not much, and they need more support. The living conditions are quite tough. I should add, on the other side of the border in Turkey, the conditions in the camps are pretty high. I mean, in the scheme of things, I've spent some time at refugee camps in Asia and Africa doing reporting, and in the camps in Turkey, they do have electricity, they do have running water. They have education, they've got health care, they've got vocational training, the camps are well secured, some of them are in hard structures as opposed to tents. One last point on this is that although they're well taken care of, at this point it's the Turkish government who's taking, doing most of the funding, whereas it's really a global collective responsibility to take care of these refugees. And the UN has an appeal for $3 billion in aid to support these refugees. So far, the international community, the donor governments have provided only 40% of that. So there is definitely a big funding gap for organizations like UNICEF and the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR.
Did you find that, Zach, because people realized you were an American or a journalist, did anybody approach you or say, is the United States going to help us? Because as you know, that's the raging debate about Syria and when to step in and all that kind of stuff. Did anybody ask you any kind of questions like that?
Yes, absolutely. Everyone did. you know, I don't mind telling people that I'm an American in situations like that. There's sometimes when you don't mention your nationality, but in this particular case, it was safe. So when they heard that it was American, some people basically were saying, "Where are you? Where are?" I mean, they said they like Americans. They said they have nothing against Americans. They're not terrorists. These Syrians, you know, they're just looking for some sort of support. They need to be able to defend themselves, they said. And they want across the board, everybody I spoke to said, we need to be doing the West, the United States, and other nations need to be doing much more. They feel like they've been abandoned, that, you know, they're just left alone to die.
Wow. Zach, so just quickly, so you're going to stay in, are you going to stay in Turkey now for a couple more days or longer? Or are you camped out there now?
Yeah, I arrived about a week ago, and I'll be in Turkey for the until early September. So I'll be doing some more reporting here. I'm working on some other stories and hope to be back on your show at some point later too. It's you know, there's a lot of amazing stories here. You know, people who have endured some great hardships but are persevering. I mean, they're very resilient. And they're fighting the good fight and trying to bring about some sort of peace and stability, some dignity and some freedom for their country.
Zach, again, terrific stuff from TRN. Zach Badorf joining us from Turkey. Get some rest, and thanks for telling us about the story and going into Syria and giving us a glimpse of what it's really like for all the people listening to us across the world and here in America. Thanks, Zach.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, backing this up, we're going to talk to Luke Vargas, who joins us many times throughout the month from the UN, and with this UN inspecting the site of the alleged chemical weapons attack in Syria, and now this call for U.S. military response, this couldn't be bigger. I want you to hear what he had to say about that and what he knows coming up and what we should expect perhaps from the UN, what the reaction has been, and perhaps what it should have been from Samantha Power. So stay with us. More coming on this Syria story next Round the Bend on America Tonight. Już po wlepy koniec marzeń, porywane ręce, nierozpoznawane twarze. Też pokażę ci śmierć, plazy, przeciek mało lat w bronią, w koszulce barce z uniwersem. To jest strach dla następnych pokoleń, we krwi po kolana, idąc prosto w sam ogień. Bez ci przesłania, widząc to koszta wojen. Ty będziesz następny, świat szykuje odpowiedź, a nasz czas na tą rolę. Europa od strana dopuściła już do władzy holokaust. Morda krótko, kto tu jest kurwą? Sprzedali nas wtedy, to sprzedadzą nas jutro. Czarno na białym jak obraz dla N. Nienawiść to mój ojciec, matka to moja krew. Łatwiej odwrócić głowę, jeśli nie widzisz wniosku.
George Washington said, "Government is not reason, it is not eloquence, it is force, like fire. It is a dangerous servant and a fearful master." America's government is no longer the servant of the people and the protector of our liberty, but has become that fearful master. We the people must understand the nature of this government gone awry if we are to be successful in saving our country. America is being deliberately destroyed by a cabal of international gangsters so that she can be forced into subjugation to a one-world government. The God-given, unalienable rights of the Declaration of Independence are in jeopardy. We must not let them be stolen by ambitious and evil men. Utopia Silver Supplements believes it is our God-given right to make our own healthcare decisions however we deem best. If we can help you with your supplement needs and better health, then help us win this health freedom battle. Visit us today at utopiasilver.com. That's utopiasilver.com, or call 888-213-4338. Again, 888-213-4338.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hey, all you Dead Doctors Don't Lie fans, this is Justin Baker. If you missed the Doc Wallach seminar in January right here in Santa Cruz, then now is your chance to see him again. Dr. Wallach is going to be doing a Central California health tour the first week in September 2013. You'll have four opportunities to attend his world-renowned health lecture, which is helping people from around the globe reverse disease. Doc will be at the Pacific Cultural Center at 1307 Seabright Avenue in Santa Cruz on Tuesday, September 3rd. The doors open at 6:30 p.m. On Wednesday, September 4th at 6:30 p.m., we will be in Modesto at Soul Harvest Worship Center. Center, 4718 Greenleaf Court, followed by two lectures on Thursday, September 5th at 10:30 a.m. at Mosswood Park Great Hall at 3612 Webster Street in Oakland. And the last event of the health tour will be in Sacramento the evening of September 5th at 6:30 p.m. at the Church of Scientology at 1007 6th Street. Don't miss these life-changing events. Seating is limited, so contact me today at 831-331-9523. That's 831-331-9523 to reserve your free VIP seats.
For over 5 years, you've been hearing about the Berkey guy, so you may know a few things about him. For example, you are well aware of the superior quality and effectiveness of Berkey water filters and accessories. But did you know the Berkeys have had independent lab tests done to prove just how effective they are? It's true, and he can email you the test results. Just visit GoBerkey.com. You may also know that the Berkey guy has helped tens of thousands of people get better prepared. Now here's something you may not know. GoBerkey.com has amazing specials and deals all the time on a wide variety of survival and preparedness products. Most ready to ship same day. Visit the Berkey guy at GoBerkey.com and be sure to click the red Products on Sale Now button. You can always call toll-free 877-886-3653. Again, that's 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com, home of the Berkey guy.
Summertime is sale time at Herbal Healer Academy. Current customers know this is the time to save big and stock up at HerbalHealer.com. New customers, welcome to the web's best place to save on vitamins, minerals, and more. Right now, Herbal Healer's summer specials include our 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes on sale, CoQ10 with Hawthorn, Colon Enhancer, Sea Cucumber, Super Fem and Super Male Plex, plus Glucosamine Chondroitin, our best-selling liquid CalMag Vitamin D, and our colloidal minerals, all on sale for summer at HerbalHealer.com. And Herbal Healer also offers certificate correspondence courses in natural medicine. Enjoy same-day shipping and free online newsletter. Log on to our nation's leader in supplying quality natural medicine and education since 1988. Herbal Healer Academy at HerbalHealer.com.
Of course, covering the United Nations. And, Luke, I guess, you know, we talked to Zach Badorf, and he was mentioning about the United Nations and the money, the $3 billion for aid, and looking at this situation in Syria and there on the Turkish border. And he spent some time in a refugee camp for the internally displaced persons. I know you spoke to him. Obviously, we heard that. So what's the likelihood that anything happens with the United Nations in this funding?
It's going to be tough. I think Zach painted a very good picture of what the situation is, and that's that there's a tremendous amount of resources piling up along the Turkish border. The kind of services that he was listing, seeing in the Turkish camps, water and everything to vocational training, that's very impressive. That's a developed humanitarian infrastructure. And then just going over the border, the camp that he visited is less than a mile from the border. And there the resources are already being strained. And as you imagine, as you push further into Syria towards the site of fighting in Aleppo, is the closest big city to him, the resources really start to dwindle. And the United Nations has very little it can do. It can raise money, but access is key here. And there are some countries like France who have been trying to gather momentum for a UN resolution that would create basically what are called humanitarian corridors, where fighting would essentially end. A temporary, likely truce would you know, govern a small area, allowing humanitarian deliveries into a region, and then the fighting could, I guess, pick up in the wake. But there's very little support at the UN for anything on Syria at the moment, let alone something as seemingly politically simple as humanitarian aid. Money will come in, but I really can't say with any confidence that the UN is going to be able to effectively allow or find a way to get access into the areas where there's fighting and grave need of aid.
Then the other thing is, and Zach talked about this too, is the news about alleged chemical weapons, an incident in Damascus the other day. So many of these people, these 11,000 people or so, are concerned about the possible use of chemical weapons, because can you imagine with the precarious situation there? And what are you hearing about that?
Well, the camp that Zach was in has been hit in the past with mortar shells. I don't believe those populations have experienced a direct chemical weapons strike, but as is the case with refugees in a country like Syria, people are coming from all over, and it wouldn't surprise me if there are some in the ranks at the camp that Zach was visiting who have experienced more intimate experience to a chemical attack. They have certainly happened in other parts of the country. The majority of attention, though, on the chemical front is in the south, is in Damascus, where the incident happened yesterday. And here again, we've got a UN team that is on the outside looking in. The UN sent a Swedish scientist named Åke Sällström, who's very accomplished and acclaimed in his field, and he went there, but he's not a politician. So they sent along a UN diplomat, and for the past 6 months, she's been trying to get access for that scientific team, and after all those months, she was only able to get access to three sites. And so even though Åke Sällström, the scientist, is in Damascus, less than 5 miles from where the chemical attack is supposed to happen yesterday, and that there's some absurdity to just even thinking about that, he is, you know, from all the indications I have, being handled by the government, his movements are being guided, and I get the impression he can't just hop in an SUV with the UN's name on it and drive over to where this attack was. I think there's very little leverage on his part, and that's probably why the UN is sending Angela Kane, his political counterpart, out there today. The window is closing on having any ability to verify what kind of attack may have occurred here. These vapors, chemical vapors, dispersed within hours. Unfortunately, the UN is at the mercy of its host in Syria, and that's the Assad government.
Yeah, and you've watched this unfold now for a while in Syria, and, you know, ultimately it's what was the propaganda that's out, and as you just said, how, you know, the window is closing on verifying that and whatnot. From what you know from your sources at the United Nations, are they incredibly disappointed that the world has not jumped, as you said, even the humanitarian aid, much more, and grabbed a hold of this, and just for some reason, because of other things that have happened in the Middle East or whatever the reason, is there massive disappointment?
It's been a very strange work environment this week. So essentially last night there was an emergency meeting of the Security Council. This council, at least this year, and I've only been working at the United Nations since the beginning of this year, so I can't speak to how this group of diplomats has reacted in the past to certain massacres, essentially. But from what I could tell, they were willing to just keep deferring statements. I know it's going to be impossible to get much of anything past a Russian veto or past a Chinese veto, but the extent to which American diplomats in particular have not even attempted to use the bully pulpit on Syria is astounding to me, particularly with Samantha Power now at the United Nations. I think expectations about her performance are fading very quickly as people see that she is not the vigorous and vocal campaigner against genocide that she was able to be in the academic world. She has been noticeably absent from the meetings today, the meetings yesterday, and we're just not hearing the U.S., at least at the United Nations level, projecting much of a message on the Syrian issue. They're allowing impasses at the Security Council to write the story for them.
Wow. All right, Luke Vargas, thanks so much. Appreciate the update. Terrific stuff from TRN. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
And so Luke will obviously be up on deck a little bit later this week as we wait and see what happens with Syria and how this all unfolds. Other things that we're going to talk about closer to home include, sadly, what's going on in Yosemite. You know, we've been talking about these fires really for the past month or so, and it's gotten that much worse. The one area of Yosemite, they're calling it the Rim Fire. I mean, it's just a beautiful, beautiful area, and it's already inhaled the fire, if you can call it that, destroyed 134,000 acres, and this is just as of Sunday. The firefighters feel as though the winds are starting to die down. That's helping, but the fire doubled in size from Thursday to Friday and just kept on going, clicking along on Saturday, and it was just that bad. So they believe they have about 10% contained so far at this point. And the way it was explained to me over the weekend is, you know, we used to let these a long time ago, maybe 50 years ago or so, we used to just let these fires burn, and that was part of the deal. And then it was sort of the ecology of these giant parks and the fires in general. Of course, now that's not what we do. You put them out. The idea is put them out. And there is a thread of thought that that's why we've gotten into this situation. The impact so far, there's been no really direct impact on Yosemite Valley. And that area is where most tourists will show up. And there's the waterfalls in the park. They've got the famous cliffs, really, are at that area of Yosemite. So thank goodness that part is still okay. But the fact of where they're at, and the fact that it's a state of emergency in the San Francisco area, and why? Because it's a threat to the utilities. The San Francisco Public Utilities had to shut down because their transformer lines, all of that is connected. That reservoir there is in Yosemite, and it's close. It's east of the fire. So there's the other concern there. And you have tons of firemen out there. Got about 4,500 structures, houses, that kind of stuff as of now. And right now, many of them are under threat at this point. Because of the lack of moisture from the sky on the ground, and even with the wind dying, that's a positive thing, but it's just hard to get a handle on the breadth of this fire. So you've got fixed-wing aircraft up there. You've got 10 helicopters. Anything they can do, they're trying to dump things. They're trying to get it on the ground. I mean, it's just absolutely crazy what's happened there. Right now, they're on voluntary evacuation. They're saying if it gets even closer and there tends to be a wall, if there's a wall of fire comes at a certain area, then that's when they'll really push to have it evacuated. And this is really the height of the season in Yosemite. So these possible cancellations are costing the people that make a living as well in Yosemite thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. But it's one of those things where, what, you know, the most important thing is they got to get the fire out. They got to try to keep the people safe, the visitors safe. They've got, usually on a very busy summer weekend, you'd be talking about 15,000 visitors or so. And people come from other countries. This is a hot spot, pardon the pun, but it's a hot spot for people to come. So people come from other areas. One of the things they have on their list if they go west is to see Yosemite. In fact, they had 4 million visitors last year. So 4 million, and so many of them came in August and through the Labor Day weekend. So that's probably going to affect that. And they're trying to do, like I said, they're trying to do everything they can to keep it away from the tourist areas. And we'll see what kind of luck they have at this point. That Rim Fire, as I said, is very, very bad. It's terrible. Over 130,000 acres. All right, we're hitting that final turn on this hour of America Tonight. I'll meet you in a few.
It's hurricane and wildfire season again. Why do thousands of people sit in these reoccurring problem areas year after year, betting their lives that the disaster won't get them? Hundreds of you help eFoods Direct ship 50,000 donated meals to the Oklahoma victims. The problem is we can't help everybody. If every one of us who can will take care of ourselves, we can all pitch in to take care of those who really can't. The new just-in-case pack from eFoods Direct is the big brother to the 7-day emergency pack designed for Oklahoma disaster donations. It contains a 2-month supply for one person, or a 1-month supply for two adults, or a 2-week supply for a family of four. The $320 price is $50 less than retail. Call 800-409-5633 on the web eFoodsDirect.com/Alex. Order two or more, get 10% off. Free shipping applies. Call 800-409-5633 on the web eFoodsDirect.com/Alex.
Amino acids are the building blocks of proteins. Amino acids have to be delivered to your body in the shape that nature gave them if they are to be used to create new proteins in your body. Just like a bricklayer cannot use bent or twisted bricks to build a brick wall, so too your body cannot use bent or twisted amino acids to build new proteins. Giving your body an undamaged amino acid food can make a huge difference in your health. One World Way is an undamaged amino acid food unlike any other. You see, heating bends and twists amino acids, and all whey protein powders we've investigated and most proteins you consume are heated. With our True Cool process, you now have a choice with One World Way.
My name is Daniel. I'm 34 years old. When I started using One World Whey, I weighed 228 pounds. Now, after 2.5 months, I weigh 182 pounds. This is my ideal weight. I've noticed an increase in stamina, rate of recovery from workouts, and an increase in my potency.
Call 888-988-3325 or visit oneworldway.com.
Is your dream more time, more money, or better health? Stop by our longevity booth at the Minnesota State Fair and say hello to the GCN team reps and get your healthy energy drink on the way to the fair. Sign up for door prizes and find out about our amazing home-based business opportunity as featured in Success Magazine, located near the main entry to the State Fair off Snelling and Dan Patch Avenue at 1366 Snelling Avenue North, or call 651-261-2040.
You know about RVs, you've heard about bunkers, but surviving is not recreation, and man wasn't made to live underground. Introducing Survivalist Camps, the ultimate fully functional off-the-grid survival bug-out house that's mobile, well-equipped, and custom-built to outlast any other RV or trailer. Go to survivalistcamps.com to learn more. That's survivalistcamps.com, providing your basic needs to survive. Survivalistcamps.com.
I needed somewhere to hang my head without your news. You gave me something that I didn't have, but had no use. I was too weak to give in, too strong to lose. My heart is on no rest again, but I break loose.
Everybody, it is August 26th, so what does that mean? A couple of things happened in history worth mentioning. In 1939, the World's Fair was being held in New York during this time. It was really the catalyst for what became the first televised Major League Baseball game ever. 1939. WNBC TV announcer Red Barber called the game between the Cincinnati Reds and the Brooklyn Dodgers, which was happening at Ebbets Field in Brooklyn, New York, of course. Television was still brand new. Regular programming didn't, of course, exist. Think of all the programs we have now. Think of cable. But there were only about 400 televisions in the New York area. And it wasn't, you know, till years later, the mid-40s, that regular network broadcasting became huge in the United States. And, of course, in the mid-50s, television sets became much more common. The, you know, a typical middle-class family could afford a TV by then. But the very first televised game would be in 1939. So can you imagine if you knew somebody's family had a television, 400 TVs, and you get to see it? That would be wild. And now it's nothing. It's nothing to think of seeing a game. You walk in your shop and you see games. When you're in the any kind of the electronics departments, they're just there. You're just watching from afar. But at the time, it had to have been amazing. And behind the scenes would have been the interesting thing that this was so new to everybody. The fact that you could actually see the game instead of just hear it. I love radio, and I think some of the best announcers, and especially old-time announcers, were incredible. Like Vin Scully has been in the broadcast booth, I want to say, over 60 years and just got another extension from the Dodgers, from the Los Angeles Dodgers. So how interesting is it that we're talking about 1939 and the Dodgers and the Cincinnati Reds being the first game ever on the tube? All right, some other things happened on this day in history if we look back. I love to look back. You know, that whole thing about history is bound to repeat itself. Well, if we go back and we look in anything to do with war, the American Revolution, for example, at this day, on this day, in 1776, Washington urged the Hessians to desert. You know, if you remember your history, if you think about your history for a second, he was falsely confident that this is the general, it's Washington, that the British would not attack New York's Manhattan Island. And he poured additional reinforcements into the lines around Brooklyn Heights, then around Long Island, which was very rural at the time, and also ordered the dispersal of certain documents among the Hessians, which he wrote. The papers were designed for the troops, you know, for the foreign troops, and they were put in several channels so it would be conveyed to them, and said, "I had reason to believe that many have fallen into their hands." So Washington contemplated how could he woo those mercenaries away from the British and pull them into the Patriot forces. The previous May, he was talking about that. And then that's how the story went on. And Washington was correct in realizing that some of the English colonists were actually German immigrants. And he was unaware that most Germans living in the American colonies spoke Southern German dialects. And they could have been marked as British mercenaries, thus Hessians from the central German territory of Hesse, if they could understand at all. So, especially Pennsylvania, one third, you know, the Dutch country, all that stuff nowadays, but one third of Pennsylvania's population was German speaking. So that's pretty confusing, isn't it? And if you think back to 1776 and what they were trying to do, is difficult. And, you know, even today, and looking at, you know, thinking back to that time and the people speaking the language, it was very difficult for Germans from other areas to understand the language at all. So many German Americans were neutral during the revolution because they didn't want to oppose the people that had offered them the opportunity to live freer lives than what they had lived at their homes, but at the same time, they didn't want to complicate things. And with the upstarts, they didn't want to be in trouble with them, so they tried to play it down the middle. And if you think of those times, boy, it was pretty tough to play it down the middle, and some of them were able to do that. So, all right, I'm going to leap ahead a couple of other things quickly since I'm going down this road of history. To me, the parts of history, you know, like when I look back on the Revolutionary War and stuff, to me it's cool because I grew up in Philadelphia, so I've said this story before. How many times have I walked by the Liberty Bell in my life, or Ben Franklin's grave growing up, or even Betsy Ross's house where the flag was supposedly conceived and made and all that kind of stuff. But if we leap ahead to our bloodiest conflict, saddest conflict, if you had any, and we've had guests on the show talking about, if you've read anything about the Civil War, 1862, the Second Bull Run campaign started then. And imagine the lives that were on this day back in history, imagine the lives that were torn apart, and this was the Confederate cavalry under General Fitzhugh Lee goes to Manassas Junction. They captured the rail center. And the Union general, John Pope's Army of Virginia, was on its way, and the two armies clashed. And this is where they were en route during on this day and then would suddenly meet after that. And as we know, certainly, how many people were just massacred and how awful it was. In Manassas, there was all kinds of looting, and they were destroying the supply depot that was there, and the big rebel force was there too as well, you know, doing everything they could to wreck everything. And so the battle then started after that. The battle was on, and Lee's army showed up, and it was a major win in the end for the Confederacy, because remember the year that I said, 1862, so 1862. Now, we're talking about this rare heat wave at the tail end of the summer. I shouldn't say rare, but it seems like every other year we have problems with heat, and then it's okay again. It's the normal temperature. You know, every single one of us can relate to watching the local news, and the weather guy says, a record temperature was set today, and usually it's not a good thing. It's either you're freezing cold or you're hot, hot, hot. On this day in 1948, it was 108 degrees Fahrenheit in New York City during a week-long heat wave that killed 33 people. Think of the year 1948. And it wasn't just New York. It was intense in New York and Philadelphia. They suffered the most. Thousands of people went to the beaches. They tried to stay there at night because they didn't want to go to their homes. They didn't have central air like we had. So they stayed on the beaches. You just have everybody staying at the beaches, just sitting there on their towels all day and all night long, which is crazy. They even massively opened up the fire hydrants to help people cool off because they were worried to try to keep people calm. It was that ugly that there were so many. I mean, there were so many people that were, frankly, passing out and all that kind of stuff. The heat was just absolutely unbearable. And it was intense the whole summer long. And the funny thing is, in Philadelphia, that the city that year had both the Republican and Democratic Party conventions. So, and there was even at the time a convention for the third party candidate. How about that? The Progressive Party. That would be Henry Wallace, 1948, and it was unbearable. There was first aid all over the place. The conventions were, it took forever to get the Republicans to come back to Philadelphia. In fact, the Republicans didn't come back for their convention. This is a good piece of trivia. Until the year 2000. they must have written down somewhere. All right, 1948, if we don't have to go back to Philly anytime soon, we're not going back to Philly. Hey, if you have any thoughts on the show, please send them to me. You know where to go, americatonight.net. Click on contact and bada bing, you're in. Thanks for listening to this hour of America Tonight.
Before another autumn arrives, celebrate the closing days of summer with the first annual Blue Green Organic Summer Fest. Friday, September 20th through Sunday the 22nd on beautiful Madeline Island, Wisconsin. It's 3 days of family-friendly fun, and admission is totally free. There's arts and crafts vendors, a farmer's market, and activities for the kids. Plus, great live music with 9 bands, both regional and local, including headliners The Suburbs and Allison Scott. It's hosted by Blue Green, serving great organic food on Bell Street on the restaurant and event center grounds. Sponsorship and vendor booths are still available. Call 952-556-8707. The Blue Green Organic Summer Fest, September 20th through 22nd. Madeline Island's never seen anything like it, and it's free. Like us on Facebook and visit BlueGreenOrganicSummerFest.com. Sponsored by South Shore Brewery, Fresh Key, Fry Wines, Freezor, Legendary Waters, The Storm 99.7, and 90 for Life Longevity.